Hello and welcome to the Majlis Radio Free Europe, the Liberties Current Affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Radio Free Europe, the Liberties media manager here in Washington, D.C. We started the new year with full swing in Central Asia. The elections on Sunday in Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan, I guess, went as was predicted. In Kazakhstan, the ruling Nur Otan party swept the parliament, and in Kyrgyzstan, Sadir Japarov is moving back to the president's office with more power. His power stems in part from the fact that along with the elections, he also got his constitutional reform passed with a landslide support, which will grant him an unprecedented power, all the power he wanted, as he heard bragging ahead of the elections. So now, how the road ahead looks like for them and how they plan to overcome some of the pressing issues that the region is going through collectively. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Ambassador Guldara Iskakova, former Kyrgyz ambassador to UK and Switzerland, and currently an expert at the Bishkek-based the Center for Political and Legal Studies. Guldara is joining us from Bishkek. Paul Stronsky, senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment's Russia in Eurasia Center. Paul is joining us from Washington, D.C. And Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, the Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. Bruce is joining us from Prague. Thank you very much, colleagues, for joining us today. So when I was preparing for the show today, one of my eyes were on the news feed that was coming out of Kazakhstan, where President Tokayev was speaking in the first session of the new parliament. There are numerous topics on the table, including lowering the threshold for entering the parliament for political parties from 7% to 5% and judicial reform. I'm sure he must have spoken about many more issues, and I'm sure that, Bruce, you are closely watching what is happening and what he's saying there. So anything standing out to you so far in his talks?
You know, I mean, lowering the threshold, I suppose, great. If you actually had some real opposition parties, then that would be great. But they don't at the moment, no registered opposition parties. So lowering the threshold for how many, you know, what percentage of the votes you have to get doesn't seem to mean anything to me. You know, it was another one of his proposals was that, you know, that they would have none of the above or against all on the ballots. And again, I was like, so what? that doesn't really constitute the kind of reform that I think Kazakhstan needs at this point. So I looked at it as an empty exercise, to tell you the truth.
Mm. Paul, what was your understanding about what he was saying today?
Well, I think it's very similar to Bruce's. I mean, we are seeing not a whole lot of change. We had an election, but we didn't really see any real shifts. Mm. There were no real opposition parties allowed to run, and as Bruce said, they don't seem to not only register but run. We saw a very constrained sort of political environment, the right to demonstrate, the right to sort of voice opposition during the campaign. And this is all despite the country's and Tokayev's pledges, you know, a year and a half ago to sort of become a more of a listening society. So, you know, we're not seeing a whole lot of living up to the pledges of the past. So I think that makes a big question about these pledges today. And the other thing, the none of the above, that just reminds me of the sort of late Soviet, early post-Soviet era. Almost going back 20 years when we would see those types of things and not a forward movement towards greater accountability towards the population and a greater voice of the population in government.
Just one more point on Kazakhstan before I move on to Kyrgyzstan. Bruce, the parties that got into the parliament are the same ones, right? What I'm saying is there is no new party got into the parliament as a result of this election.
No, absolutely not. You know, it was the Akchol, the People's Party of Kazakhstan, which was formerly the Communist People's Party of Kazakhstan. And then, of course, you know, Nur Otan, you know, those were the only three parties to win seats in 2012, the only three parties to win in 2016. You know, if there's anything that was different about that, which was curious, I suppose they did this for their international image, but just that Nur Otan actually won less seats. You know, I guess they were trying to show that it was truly competitive. And so for once, Nur-Otan, what they end up with 76 seats, and they had 84 before that. And I think 83 in 2012, 84 in 2016, something like that. So I suppose you could say that the Nur-Otan party suffered something of a defeat. But again, it was all staged. So
And we are not expecting that the parties which got into the parliament this time, they're going to do anything different than what they used to do in their previous terms, I guess. I mean, anything new expected from them?
I can't see why they would, to tell you the truth. No, I mean, the whole process is very, very familiar. You know, it might be a new president officially, but as far as the elections and what's come after, it's pretty much business as usual.
Mm. On Kyrgyzstan, Ambassador, Sadir Japarov got a comfortable win. He also got his constitutional referendum passed. So what has been happening since the election on Sunday?
So the Central Election Commission is counting the results. We have automatic system, and also they counted by hand all the bulletins. So it is expected that by the end of this month, they will announce official results. Yes, it was a crucial victory for Sadir Japarov, but the turnout of voters for elections was lower than usually, much lower. So it is a bit more than 30%. And we count that it is only a third part of the population came to vote, and he won 80%. It is still a big number, but it is not turnout to which we used to. It is believed that the turnout is lower this time because there were no purchase of votes buying, as in previous elections to the parliament on October 4.
That's a progress.
Yeah, which brought to the massive acts of protests in Bishkek and ended up in a coup, actually.
Right.
Also, form number two, so-called, was eliminated from the legislation. So now voters cannot register to another address to vote.
Mm.
And in previous parliamentary elections, this form was used in order for the party list members to collect voters who can vote for them and buy their vote, actually, to certain electoral precincts in order to show to their party leaders that they collected a certain number of votes. So there was no such form during the presidential elections this time.
Right. Ambassador, also just one follow-up question on what you just said. I mean, you said the result, what we have seen so far, is not official. What's the expectation? Could it change?
It is not non-official. The results are published by the Central Election Commission on their website.
Mm.
But according to the law, there must be an official announcement of the results upon the count all the ballots, both by hand and automatically.
Okay. Paolo,
and also, before the publication, they should also consider all the complaints that were received during the elections and resolve them.
Right. Paul, Ambassador, pointed out about the low turnout in Kyrgyz election. I think we also had same problematic picture in Kazakhstan at this time around. I mean, we had a conversation earlier about the outcome of the elections in Kazakhstan. People were talking about the low turnout. What stands out to you there on that front?
Well, I think in some places it was particularly low, you know, shockingly low, not only for the region, but for the amount of across the world. And so that's not all that surprising. This is not, the population has been growing dissatisfied with their government and growing a little bit more desperate at the fact that they don't really have a voice, and that the promises of the past that were made in, you know, 2019, when we started seeing this transition away from Nazarbayev, and we did see a sort of activization of civil society, there hasn't been a whole lot of positive faith towards the government. So I think, you know, we're seeing an alienation and a further split between the governing elites and society as a whole. And that suggests to me there's not a whole lot of faith both in institutions and in the government process. And, you know, I'm not surprised. I mean, the Kazakh people, like, you know, the Kyrgyz people, they've been through a lot. And the government really hasn't been all that helpful over the past several years in dealing with their bread and butter needs. And, you know, we've seen seen the pandemic, we've seen the economic problems, and I think we're seeing a growing disenchantment of the population and a lack of belief that there's any point or any reason that they need to go out and vote.
Yeah, already said that there was no opposition, genuine opposition party on the ballot. So coming back to Kyrgyzstan Ambassador, I learned that the Constitutional Council has not yet started its work. What's going on that front? I mean, what they are doing with the document? That was only the constitutional draft which was passed on Sunday.
So the originally it was an idea of Sadır Japarov when he was just an acting president to have constitutional reforms and to have a presidential form of government in order to concentrate executive power in his hands. But strangely, not the government, but members of the parliament came out with the initiative draft of the constitution. Mm-hmm. Which was put for the public discussion, but because of the wide criticisms, they started to responding to public voices and created Constitutional Council. It was created already, and again.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is
in
like
civil society, people were unhappy with the composition of the Constitutional Council. Mm. It was a little bit changed, but there are no clear leading experts who have opposing viewpoints in the Constitutional Council. And while we were conducting election campaign and campaign for the referendum and had voting processes, the Constitutional Council was working. It was continuing to work, and it has already developed a draft of the constitution with a presidential form of government, but they decided to keep it until they have the results of the referendum.
Uh-huh. But they have it. I mean, they have the result, isn't it? Result,
yeah,
of
now
the
they have the results, and probably they are waiting for the original initiator of this constitution, Sadır Japarov, to be inaugurated.
Okay.
And make decisions regarding the Constitutional Council, whether they will accept what the council already produced or and put it for public discussion, or whether they are going to have a new Constitutional Council. So it will be entirely up to them. What is clear is that because of the budgetary restraints, they don't want to have a referendum on the constitution separately from other elections. And we have elections to the local council on April 12th, and they want to combine this local elections with the referendum on the new constitution. So before April 12th, the text of the draft constitution should be adopted, I don't know, whether by the Constitutional Council or some other body, maybe parliament, in order to put it for the referendum.
Mm. Okay, in a couple of words, Ambassador, if still talking about the draft of the constitution, new constitution, how the process is going to look like going forward? I mean, what's the next step in its way to be put ultimately in the legal framework?
Well, according to the constitution, the new constitution can be adopted, or the current constitution can be changed, only through the parliament. But the term of the parliament was over on October 4, so it is now somewhat partially illegitimate parliament, and it cannot, according to the Venice Commission, to undertake major reforms. However, the president-elect now insists on the reform and that the current parliament should undertake it. So he's kind of speeding up the process. And there are two ways, according to the constitution. It is either the parliament adopts the new constitution itself by 2/3 of the vote, but then there will be question of legitimacy of such a decision of this illegitimate parliament. And then there is a second way, when this parliament calls the referendum. So it looks like they will proceed in this second way.
You mean new constitutional referendum that they are talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But in order to call this constitutional referendum, again, by 2/3 of the votes of the parliament, they need somehow to agree upon the text of the draft constitution and law on calling the referendum. And according to the rules of procedure and other laws in this country, there must be public discussions first. So they need time in order to put this draft for the public discussion. And I am sure that they will arrange wide support for this draft.
arranging a wide support is a good way to put it. Thank you, Master. So, Bruce, now that they get the document they wanted passed in the referendum, but they don't know what to do with it. And you remember there were already an outcry before the referendum, some saying that people were not given enough time to look into this document before they vote on it. So, so welcome back to Einedermes. Let's see how they get out of it. How do you see it?
He's pressing for this constitutional reform, and
but he can't legally he can't do that, right? Legally he can't do that. Legally he can't press parliament to pass it, right?
No, since he was elected as a president by overwhelming majority, I think he can initiate.
But you said this parliament cannot pass it.
This parliament is illegitimate even to call the referendum. Yes, but candidate to the presidency, Klara Solonkulova, two other persons, applied to the constitutional chamber in order to challenge the law which postponed the elections to the parliament. And constitutional chamber actually supported the parliament, saying that it was legal. So it looks like, independently of whether somebody else will apply to the constitutional chamber and challenge the calling of the referendum by the current parliament, the chamber will side up with the parliament and, moreover, with the president-elect now.
Wow. Anything to add, Bruce?
You know, just that also we should be real clear about what was just passed as a referendum, too. It was a simple question of, do you want a presidential or parliamentary system of government? That was what they voted on January 10th, and people voted for a presidential system of government. So now that's why they now have to draft a constitution that has a presidential form of government contained in it. You know, now that said, as Ambassador Isakova has pointed out, you know, this parliament is not really legitimate, and a lot of decisions that have been made since the end of October until today are going to be called into question again and again, because it really shouldn't have been parliament's decision to make at all on some of this stuff. For that reason, I'm almost positive they'll put it to a national referendum. I mean, it'll be a popular vote. And you know, as much as we might want to think that, you know, maybe people will vote against it in the referendum, there has never been a referendum held in Central Asia that I can ever remember, not just in Kyrgyzstan, but anywhere that didn't pass. You know, so it's almost guaranteed. If it goes to referendum, it'll pass. It's hard for me to conceive that there would be a no vote.
At least they will have more time to think through this, at least one positive outcome from this discussion. Okay, so of course, I also must acknowledge here that none of these elections are declared fair and free. And there were numerous signs of wrongdoings during the election, about which we have spoken on different platforms, as I said. So I'm not going to get into details of them here. But nevertheless, Tokayev sustained the majority in the parliament, and Sadr Japarov got what he wanted out of the election day. The big question is now, as I said earlier, what is next? How the road ahead looks like for them, and what are their plans to address some of those issues, and what would be signed to keep an eye on to understand how they are performing. Let's continue the conversation talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Ambassador Gulnara Iskakova, former Kyrgyz ambassador to UK and Switzerland, and expert at the Bishkek-based Center for Political and Legal Studies. Paul Stronsky, senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment's Russia and Eurasia programs. And Bruce Panier, the editor of Ready for Your Pride Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. I am Mohammed Tahir, Ready for Your Pride Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. And we are discussing the latest elections in Kazakhstan, in Kyrgyzstan, and their implications. So, Ambassador, again, back to you. Speaking of the next step in Kyrgyzstan, I guess Japarov deserves rather more scrutiny, given that he is the most powerful president with all the powers he wanted. So what's he doing with all this power now, or what he plans to do with all this power?
Right. This is a very good question, because from the beginning, he announced those political reforms, which were not needed actually in the country, because there were other pressing problems like pandemia and what to do with health system, how to adjust it to the current challenges, economic crisis related to both pandemia and political crisis. But instead of doing all these things, he started all these political debates and discussions and constitutional changes and elections, and etc. And from the beginning, besides fighting corruption, and now he says about national unity and stability in the country, he does not have good economic reform agenda. He had no program for his election campaign until after the new year. And in his program, his economic part is quite weak. He has all these, you know, fashionable things in his program, like internet-based businesses, technopark, nanotechnologies, pharmaceutical. But there is no basis for this in our country. And there is no clear vision how he is going to manage the country throughout these difficulties. So I don't know really why he wants all this power. We shall see what he is going to undertake.
Mm-hmm. Paul, what about Kazakhstan? President Tokayev, what are his plans and what are his challenges going ahead?
Well, I think some of the challenges are the same that Kyrgyzstan faces, perhaps not as acute. Just on Kyrgyzstan, I just want to highlight, I mean, the country, you know, is at risk of default. I mean, they've had to beg the Chinese, given all their loans. And so, you know, there's serious economic problems there. And I think we're seeing some of that to a lesser extent. But, you know, we still have the pandemic. This election really didn't talk all that much about a pandemic. They are, you know, talking about having jumpstarting, you know, new economies and diversifying the economy, particularly as we enter in sort of the end of the oil era. This is all things that this government has to face. At the same time, when you have rising social discontent and rising sort of economic frictions. So, you know, what I think we're seeing probably in both countries, but we're sort of seeing the same old sort of elite politics and elite maneuvering play out, and the needs of the actual needs of the population are not being addressed, you know, particularly, you know, the rising number of poor and the people who've been most difficultly hit by the pandemic. And a lot of what you're hearing is populist slogans as opposed to real solutions.
Right. Bruce, let me bring you in here, if you wish. Talk about both of these countries. And, you know, Paul touched upon that, and also Master. So economic slowdown is, of course, a global story, but Kyrgyzstan has been badly affected, as well as Kazakhstan in that case. And then the pandemic, we never got to know, I guess, how these countries performing at any given time, and what's the level and scale of the impact of the pandemic on those countries and what they are doing about that. So talking about the plans that the leadership has in mind to address some of those issues, what you have heard so far?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't want to lay this all just on these two governments. I mean, governments all over the world are having a hard time trying to figure out how they're going to, you know, they want to look ahead and talk about the time when the economy gets back on its feet, but they still have this health crisis in the meantime that they have to get under control. So this is tough. Obviously, it hits Kyrgyzstan harder because Kazakhstan, of course, can export oil and it has more reserves. And so it's in better positioned to kind of keep the economy going. I haven't seen the figures. Maybe Paul's seen the figures for Kazakhstan from last year. I don't know if they've released them yet. But Kyrgyzstan, just today, they showed that they had, 8.6% GDP reduction. Minus 8.6% in 2020. That's bad.
That's bad. Yeah.
It's just to get it back to where it was before the pandemic hit is going to be a huge effort for Kyrgyzstan.
Mm-hmm. Ambassador, do we know who Jabarov is tapping into in terms of making up his team?
You know, maybe Ambassador Iskakova knows. I have not seen who his economic team is. It's always been unclear to me. And again, I mean, she hit it when she said he's got these populist ideas, right? So he's not going to put big time criminals and you know, officials who embezzled a lot of money in jail. He's going to offer them a chance to just pay it back. You know, that's supposedly one of his great solutions for bringing money back into Kyrgyzstan's economy. You know, Kyrgyzstan is a real remittance dependent country. Most of those people work in Russia. Their economy is hurting.
Right.
You know, so there's just, you know, I've said it before even on this show that it's not really even a problem of, you know, what can Japarov do? It's like, what could anybody do in this situation, really? I mean, Kyrgyzstan's got some serious challenges ahead of it. there's nothing you can do to fend off what's coming, as far as I can see. Yeah. There's just no way.
Yeah,
at least Kazakhstan can fall back on oil sales and ramp up production, and even at the low price, they can bring in money. But Kyrgyzstan doesn't have that option.
But you know, given all these populist promises that Japarov has given, and now that he has the powers, he has to do something with it. But if there's any solution, he's the guy who needs to bring this in and help people going out of this. Paul, are you trying to say something?
No, I mean, I would just, you know, one of the things, you know, his populist solutions and his call for, you know, all the corrupt officials of the past to repay their money, that's great, but it's not necessarily being done in a transparent manner. And so you don't know what also deals are being done behind the scenes of who gets to pay what and how they pay it and how that's determined. And so this, I think, replicates some of the longstanding, you know, lack of accountability moving forward. And it again, highlights the sort of lack of strong institutional change there. And then the other thing I just wanted to highlight with Bruce, particularly those remittances, you see them, you know, in GDP figures. But what's really important to think about it is those remittances keep a lot of people above the poverty level, or they were keeping families, extended families, above the poverty level. And without that money coming back, you're seeing a lot of people really, really struggle like they were not even struggling a year before. And that, I think, is going to be an acute problem. It's not just in Kyrgyzstan. It's in other states, too. But Kyrgyzstan, I think, is a country that is going to be deeply affected by it. And as Bruce said, there's really no easy solution.
Yeah, perhaps Ambassador can jump in here. I mean, as one solution, he was also floating the idea of more ownership of those the resources that currently operated by China.
Yes, he was suggesting that in order to pay the debts before the China, because there is a term already to pay, he was suggesting that some of the mining sites will be given to China. However, the population in general do not like those mining sites to be worked out because they do not receive anything from this. And as we've seen, there were many cases, protests of local population against investors, because actually the locals do not receive neither taxes nor any other payments, and they have worsening situation with their ecology. So it looks like this proposal of Sadır Japarov will not work out. He has to look for other means in order to pay the debts or to restructure them or to do something else. And not only GDP situation is worsening, but also during the political crisis, the number of foreign investments came much lower comparing to previous years. Even now we have president-elect, I'm not sure that this level of direct investments pick up again. So this is also another problem for the country's economy. And Sadır Japarov did not propose actually anything in order to resolve this. We are not oil-rich country, right, as it was mentioned today, but also we are small economy. Mm-hmm. A landlocked country depending on the neighbors on transit. So we have completely different geographical, geopolitical and economic situation. So there are many challenges for the president. And in this situation, he is gaining more power and depicting that he will be reporting before people's Kurultai. As if it was a kind of vehicle for his accountability, but it is not. Right. It is a very totalitarian body, because we know that it is a very large collective body without permanent membership, without internal structures. Yeah. And they cannot keep him responsible and counteract.
We have seen how those bodies work in some of the neighboring countries, particularly Turkmenistan.
Right.
But Bruce, we are now focused kind of more on Kyrgyzstan. I have a couple of other questions on Kazakhstan before we wrap up the discussion, but just one more question on Kyrgyzstan. So on the top of all those challenges about which it appears that Sadır Japarov doesn't have any concrete plan how to address, on the top of that, you also have this very politically divided country. Former President Otunbayeva was urging yesterday, I guess, urging Japarov to bring political parties together. I think there are two questions. What I'm trying to ask is, I mean, one is where Otunbayeva is coming from when she urges Japarov to work with the other political parties?
Well, I'm not incredibly enthusiastic about speaking on behalf of former President Otunbayeva. But yeah, I mean, obviously, I suppose generally it's a good idea to to bring as many different points of view into the, you know, and opinions into your policy making as possible to prevent serious opposition, maybe worse down the road. So, you know, certainly, yeah, I would agree with her that it is necessary to talk to a lot of the different political leaders. And of course, we should distinguish that she probably means political leaders. They're actually the ones that count here in Kyrgyzstan, and try to get them on board with the whole system. But you know, in the meantime, he's managed to co-opt so many different. I mean, Parliament is just does his bidding, for instance, and has, you know, since the end of October. He wanted a referendum that, you know, they met one day, approved it on the first reading, met the next day and did the second, third reading, and it was done. They've never opposed anything he said. The Supreme Court's never opposed any of the stuff that he wanted, even though, as we heard, you know, Clara Soran-Kuleva was trying to file legal suits against various moves that were being made, and the Supreme Court rejected it. The Central Election Commission has gone along with him. His friends are the head of security, the prosecutor general. So it's not a good situation.
It is certainly not a good situation. We also have seen there is a increasing repression or harassment of people who speak their mind in Kyrgyzstan in recent days and months. And activists have been saying that. I mean, when I try to recruit people from Kyrgyzstan to talk about these sort of political issues, they are not as open as they used to be in the past. So there are a lot is going on there. On Kazakhstan, Paul, let me bring you in. There are already some protests taking place. It was taking place today, at least in some of the major cities. Mamai's party was in the streets with a handful of his supporters. So where your eyes will be going forward to understand where Tokayev is headed next?
Well, I think we need to see how these protests develop. I think the protests of a couple years ago really kind of shocked and scared the government and the elites. You know, this is in the middle of winter, so it's a lot harder to protest. But even, you know, small protests in the middle of a Kazakh winter certainly indicate that there is a lot of angst and discontent. You know, I think, you know, there are a few, you know, younger people who were elected. I think that's all great. But whether or not any of these sort of younger people are going to be able to sort of have any role in putting out new ideas, I severely doubt it. And I think there is, you know, there's a lot of people in Kazakhstan who recognize the need for change, who recognize the need for some systemic reforms, and who recognize the need for a government that actually works on behalf of the people. A lot of the protests we've seen in the countries they're over socioeconomic issues, so I'm sure we're going to try to see the government try to address that. But very often when they do, they shoot themselves in the foot because they can have a tin ear to actually the real problems. And I think, you know, the reforms that they are pledging, you know, great if they actually get implemented on paper, but I think it's more important to actually implement them in real life. And I think there's not a whole lot of expectation that these would be actually implemented in practice. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a tough road ahead, both for that relationship between the population and the people.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Paul. I think we also need to wrap up the discussion very shortly. As a final thought, though, let me ask the same question to both of you, Bruce and Master. So where your eyes will be as to what comes next in those countries? I think, Bruce, you want to leave us, so maybe let's start with Bruce, and then we will end the discussion with the Master.
Just really quickly, as far as Kazakhstan, of course, it's, you know, I mean, Paul covered it pretty well, but just to see if there's any sign at all of them finally easing some of these restrictions. Tokayev, everyone knows that Nazarbayev is really still the power that's in that country, right? But Tokayev's in this perhaps unenviable position of having to try to promise that he's going to implement some kind of reforms and that things are going to be different. But in the meantime, it's unclear how capable he is of doing any of this stuff. But they have to do something. You know, there's clearly discontent and it's clearly growing. It's small, but it's clearly growing. And so far, they've demonstrated no will to change anything at all. You know, these last elections, like I said, they just look like any of the elections before that. The same people are coming up, the same Speaker of Parliament. You know, Dariga Nazarbayev ended up winning a seat in Parliament again. There has to be a sign that something is changing in the country. Otherwise, I just see this regime headed for disaster. Now, Sapar Japarov, obviously to watch to see if he can do any of the things. You know, he said they got crushing problems in Kyrgyzstan. Right. I can't imagine his popularity is going to last very long in this situation. position. There's so many questions about the way he ascended to the presidency. There's a million things you could bring up to say he's an illegitimate president. We got to run him out. But the problem I have with that, and I'm guilty of this as much as several other people I talk to, is that there's always this idea in your head in Kyrgyzstan that when he gets to be sufficiently unpopular, there'll be a revolution and they'll run him out of power. That's possible, very possible. But this of four revolutions, this is a horrible solution.
Right.
To leadership changes, you know, and if you have a fourth revolution in 16 or 17 years, you know, it's the system doesn't look like it's holding at all at that point.
Thank you, Bruce. And let's get Ambassador your point on that. I mean, given the challenges that he finds himself and the confusion in the country and expectation that he created. So where your eyes will be going forward into what comes next and what he's going to do about those challenges?
He will said that he will fight corruption, and he announced economic amnesty, as it was mentioned today. Well, with this amnesty, it is also unclear because they have negotiations with business people who violated the law sometime in their experience, and they are bargaining with them, but nobody knows what part of their bargain goes publicly and whether some part of this goes privately. Because, for instance, Sadır Japarov's selection campaign was the richest one, is comparing to all other candidates altogether, like double as much. So it looks like he is already becoming rich even during his campaign. And I don't see any good team with him. He appointed some people who were his friends, his relatives, also former officials who worked for former President Bakiyev. And his brothers, for instance, national security. He appointed people who were actually almost prosecuting civil society activists.
Right.
So it doesn't look like he has a good team or good ideas or good program. So I don't know what he has in mind, but we will be all closely watching what he will undertake with his power.
He is going
to change election law as well. So there will be elections to the parliament in May, as he announced. But before, he wants to conduct changes to the election law in order to have a part of the parliament elected in single member electoral districts. They call it majoritarian system, but we shall see whether it will be a plural system or majoritarian system. But it won't be a political parties list. And more or less same elites, actually, like in Kazakhstan also, come to the power. So there is no hope that there will be a crucial change in the country.
Okay, so just very shortly, Ambassador, so where do you see Japarov's government next year at this time around?
Well, it was mentioned that it can be a fourth revolution or coup in Kyrgyzstan. Well, general populace, they say that now they took power in their hands and they will resolve all the things in the country themselves. So they chose Sadır Japarov, like it was a revenge of village guys against urban guys. So now they wanted to demonstrate that their candidate will do better. We shall see. I don't think that he will do better, but unless his political support base will be dissatisfied with him, he will be strong politically.
Yeah, okay, terrific. Thank you very much, Ambassador. Alice Powell, you want to add anything? I'm going to conclude the discussion right here.
No, thank you very much. It was a great conversation.
Terrific. Thank you very much, Paul Stronsky, Senior Fellow at the Carnegie Endowments Russia and Eurasia Programs, and Ambassador Gulnara Iskakova, former Kyrgyz ambassador to UK and Switzerland and expert at the Bishkek-based the Center for Political and Legal Studies, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, the Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, again for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you.
And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, the Liberties Media Manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.